दीपाय पोटाम के गंगमयी के मनमयी के तुलसी देवी के भक्ति देवी के संकीर्तन के श्रीहरि नाम संकीर्तन के समवेत भक्त वृंद के गो प्रेम गौरी श्री समुद्रभूति गौरी श्री समुद्रभूति गौरी श्री समुद्रभूति गौरी श्री शिष्य गुरु
Hare Krishna. It is our great pleasure that today amongst us present Nirantar Swami Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
He is one of the senior disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya for ISKCON Society. His Holiness Niranjan Maharaj joined ISKCON in Boston City in earlier 70s, and from that onwards he has dedicated his life entirely to the service of Srila Prabhupada. He is one of the legendary book distributors, and during the communist regime he has distributed books by taking high risk of his life. And he has established Krishna consciousness in Russia as one of the important religious principles coming from India. And this way he has really served Srila Prabhupada to his heart satisfaction. In fact, as we know, Srila Prabhupada went to Russia along with Shyam Sundar Prabhu, and that time he planted seed of Krishna consciousness in some devotees, and from that onwards the little creeper of devotional service in Russia grew, and His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj has given immense contribution to the growth of that creeper. And now we see in Russia there are thousands and thousands of devotees who are dedicating their lives completely to the service of Srila Prabhupada. His Holiness Niranjan Swami Maharaj is also a writer. He has written a book, Taking Care of Devotees, a very, very important aspect of Krishna consciousness. Although he is not having always very good health, but still he keeps on traveling all over the world and keeps on enlightening devotees. So we also are very fortunate that he is here amongst us. So I kindly request him to speak a few words of enlightenment, and also we would like to welcome here by loudly chanting three times Hari Bol. Hari Bol. Hari Bol. Thank you, Maharaj, coming here. Hare Krishna.
Actually, there were many devotees before me who made great sacrifices in the former Soviet Union. I was just riding on the crest of the wave. Baba had already been gone many years before I began going. I did go in communist times, and I did have experiences of at least of having to preach underground, so to speak. But many devotees had also gone there before I did. In fact, it was since you brought it up, I somehow it was quite mystical how I happened to start teaching in the former Soviet Union. It was at the end of the 1980s, and one friend of mine, wealthy friend of mine, had met some of the devotees from the Soviet Union on their first trip to India. And he became so overwhelmed by his meetings and talks with them that he's speaking about, I'd like to go there. So I said, well, why didn't you go there? And he said, well, if I go, I won't go without you. So I said, well, I'll contact Kirtiraj Prabhu, who at that time was one of the unsung heroes of the development of Krishna consciousness in the former Soviet Union. I was recently talking to Dwarkadish, and he was telling me about the play. In fact, I was watching it just before I came, Salted Bread. And he was talking to me about the sacrifices that those devotees had undergone in the early 1980s, many of them being imprisoned. And he even used the word unsung heroes. And he thought that it would be good to put on that performance to make people realize the kind of austerities and sacrifices that were made for establishing Krishna consciousness in the communist country, in the communist world. But I also mentioned to him that another unsung hero was Kirtiraj, my godbrother, who gave a good portion of his life for free the Soviet Hare Krishna's campaign. In fact, he even told me back in 1990, I think it was, he said that he had two children but never knew who their father was, practically, because he was always so busy. He grew up without a father because he gave at least 10, 15 solid years for pushing on this Free the Soviet Hare Krishna campaign all over the world. And that was during the time that the devotees were imprisoned in labor camps and psychiatric institutions. And anyways, I approached Kirtiraj at that time, and I said, I have a friend that wants to visit Soviet Union, and he won't go without me. He said, great, so go together. And I asked him what did I had to do to go there. He said, yes, we'll have to talk about that. And arrangements had to be made. I had to be briefed how to enter the Soviet Union. First thing I had to do was I had to grow my hair. And then after letting my hair grow for a few months, I was further instructed about removing my neck beads. I could bring in no devotional paraphernalia of any kind, no books, no nothing. I said, I have to take my japa beads. He said, no. I ended up stuffing my japa beads inside the pocket of one of my trousers in my suitcase, hoping they, because they usually go through everything when you cross the border. And then he briefed me also how to talk in codes in the hotels, because the hotel rooms were always bugged with microphones, and all the tour guides were all KGB agents. And I had to go on tours with a group of people, and we would come from America. It was my first tour was a small group of about 15, 20 people. We flew together on Pan American Airlines, and we had a tour guide who was meant to be the liaison between the Russian in-tourist Soviet in tourists, and the group of tourists that were coming. In fact, and there was a little story about that too. I think I'll tell it. It's interesting, an interesting story. But Kirti Raj had to sit down and give me a briefing of everything, of you know, how to make yourself look like you're a tourist. And I had to go on all the tours with the other tourists, and I had a camera around my neck. And wherever we would go, I would take pictures as if I was really intrigued by the Soviet culture. But actually, all I was thinking was how I could get away. The right time and place of how to break away. And sometimes we had our programs in the middle of the night when all the tourists were sleeping. I would leave the hotel and I'd have to make my bed look like I slept in it in case they came in the morning. I would go and do a program at a prearranged time and place that was arranged to the devotees, through Kirti Raj Prabhu actually, who had his way of contacting the devotees in the Soviet Union at that time. And they would come meet me at a pre-assigned place and time. And I didn't know who I was looking for, and they didn't even know who they were looking for. We just had to try to figure out by signals, you know, that are you the one I'm looking for? Because I was not dressed like a devotee. But the first time I actually entered into the Soviet Union, it was prearranged that I was supposed to meet one devotee in front of the statue at St. Basil's Cathedral in Red Square at a particular time, and I had to call him. I was given a number to call as soon as I arrived in the Soviet Union. Usually when you come with a tour, everybody first arrives and they're given time to rest from the flight. So I immediately left the hotel and I looked for a payphone so that I could make this call. And I had to go around quite some distance until I finally found the payphone. But then I realized I had no kopecks, which were the little coins to make the call. And I didn't know what to do, so I tapped on the person next to me, the shoulder, and to ask him if I could have a coin to make this call. And he turned and I realized, and I saw it was our tour guide. And he said to me, "What are you doing here?" And I didn't know. I just got here. And already I'm caught. And I just said, "What are you doing here?" I didn't know what else to say. It was a tour guide that came from America. It wasn't the tour guide from Soviet Union. There's two tour guides. They interface with each other. The one tour guide that comes from America, he speaks English and Russian, and he speaks to the Russian tour guide who speaks only Russian. And he sort of like is the liaison. So I didn't know what to do. I thought, "Oh, Krishna, my first trip, I'm already caught." So he asked me again, "Well, what are you doing here?" I just didn't know what to say. So I just said, "Well, what are you doing here?" And then he told me, he said, "You know what I'm doing here?" He said, "I'm Jewish." And he said, "I come here, I'm a guide, but I use it as a front to come and meet Jewish people who are harassed by the Soviet regime and can't practice Judaism." He actually came out and told me that. I was quite shocked. So I said, "Well, I'm a Hare Krishna. He said, really? I said, yeah. I said, I'm coming here to meet Hare Krishnas who have persecuted and who have their faith in Krishna consciousness. And so he said, okay, I tell you what, you don't tell anybody what I told you and I won't tell anybody what you told me. And we just left it at that. But anyways, when I arrived in the Soviet Union, there were already many devotees who were congregating. And they were even doing Harinam in a place called Arbat Street. And the number of people that would gather with very large groups of people sometimes would gather for those Harinams. You'd see hundreds of people. And I had to be very careful to not disclose myself as being a foreigner. Although it was obvious I was a foreigner. I didn't speak a word of Russian. They told me not to speak in public. And that very same trip, after I visited Moscow, we had a program in the middle of the forest at a particular time. I left the hotel and I broke away from the tour group, and we met in the forest where we used to have a lot of programs during those times. It was raining, so we just took a big piece of plastic and we hung it from the branches of the tree, and all the devotees would come into the forest, and the men would go off to one side, the women would go off to another side, and they would change from their clothes into their dhotis and saris. We'd come, and we didn't have many instruments at that time, we just had a pair of kartals, but the kirtans we would have were quite amazing. And I would have to go back after that and meet up with the tour, and people started getting very suspicious about what I was doing, especially when it came time to eat our meals together in the hotel, because the only thing they had in the hotel to eat was non-veg, and we'd all have to sit down as a group together, and I had to convince people like I was part of their group, and I was one of their tourists, but every time we sat down to eat, the only thing I could eat was celery strips and carrot strips. And that was the only thing they had that I could, literally, the only thing I could have that I could eat. I wouldn't touch anything else. It all was non-veg products. And a group of us, 15 of us, would be sitting down at a table. They'd all be feasting, and I'd be sitting there with a little bowl of celery strips and carrot strips. And they, finally, after about 3 or 4 meals, they turned to me and they said, don't you eat anything besides celery and carrots? And I said, I drank some bad water. Meanwhile, I was feasting with the devotees. From Moscow, I went to Kiev. It was Janmashtami. And I was supposed to give a lecture around, I think it was somewhere around 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And I arrived at the house with this devotee, Amala Bhakta. Amala Bhakta was also one of the devotees who had been persecuted for many years and was imprisoned for his Krishna conscious convictions. And when I got to the house was surrounded by police. And Achyut Priya and I, we drove to the house, and we parked way off at the distance to watch very closely to see what these police were doing, because we thought for sure they were there to get me. And we just sat in the car and just watched for about, I think about 2 hours, until they finally left. And at midnight, I was finally able to go into the building, and we had our Janmashtami program. It began at midnight. And I gave a Janmashtami lecture, and we had a... Of course, the feast in those days meant carrots and potatoes. But carrot and potato sabji, that's all they knew how to make everywhere I went. And sometimes we get some cabbage. They have varieties of carrots and potatoes, different. Sometimes the potatoes were baked, sometimes they were boiled, sometimes they had no spices, so salt and pepper. And I seem to recall they were making chapatis at that time, but it was not that much of a variety. It was quite stark. And so we had our Janmashtami feast, and then I went to Leningrad. That was my first trip. I had some encounters with KGB agents. One of them happened on my next trip. It was a little bit later that year. I went for 10 days. One thing I forgot to mention was that do you mind? I'm telling you these stories. I instead of speaking from the Bhagavad Gita, I mean, I was. I know somehow I was just inspired, just because of the announcement. But I should make it clear that I was already going to prearranged gatherings, and there were a lot of devotees before me who had already gone and attracted many people to Krishna consciousness. And it's not that I was like the pioneer by any means of the Soviet Union. Others had gone before me, although I was one of the earlier preachers to go there. But I certainly was not a pioneer. And the enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness by the time I started to visit was quite profound. There were already, I don't know, hundreds of devotees all over the Soviet Union. But on my second trip, I had come back from a program, and we used to have to leave our keys. You're not allowed to take the keys out of the hotels. You have to leave your passports at the hotel. And I'd come back late at night of the program. It was the last day of the tour. And these tours were very expensive. The reason why, as I mentioned before, I had a wealthy friend, he went with me every time, and he would pay my... In order to go to the Soviet Union, you had to have a substantial amount of money to go, because each trip costs usually between $5,000 and $6,000 for 10 days. The hotel rooms were very expensive, and the in-tourist fees were very expensive. And generally wealthy people would go there during those times. So it was the end of this last tour. I walked in the hotel, and the tour guide, this was the Russian tour guide, his name was Anatoly, really big guy. I walked in, I went up to the desk to get to my key, and he said, "I've been waiting for you." I gulped. And I turned to him, and he took me by the scarf, and he started tightening the scarf around my neck. And he was getting pretty tight, and I was looking at him in the face and wondering what he was doing. And he looked me in the eyes. He said, "What are you, an anarchist?" And I told him, I do tend to be a little independent at times. Why do you ask? he just pulled the scarf, and he said something like, "Don't you know that people who wear purple and black scarves in the Soviet Union means that they're anarchists?" I said, "No, I didn't know that." He was just making it up. Anarchist, somebody who's, anarchy. Doesn't believe in accepting authority. So it was the last day of the tour, and he said, "I'm going to let you go this time." He said, "But don't do it again." And that was it. So I don't know if he knew what I was doing or what, but he was definitely very, very heavy with me. And I thought for sure I was going to be reported to the KGB and refused entry for my next visit. But somehow, by Krishna's grace, I was able to enter the Soviet Union again. Next time, and next is I had an interesting experience also. I used to have to go as a, I had to be a professional. I had to be somebody. I couldn't tell anybody I was a Hare Krishna. So I had to be like some kind of a business professional. And I just said that I was, software engineer. Something like that. I was a software engineer. And our group met for the first time in Moscow. This was a different tour group. It was about 20, 25 people on this tour. And there was one elderly man who was retired, who was a software engineer. And I was thinking, what's going to happen to me if he sits down and talks to me? I don't know anything about software. These tours, people would interact with one another. You really had to talk and become friends with each other. So we would sit down and talk, and people would ask each other, what do you do? And I'm a software engineer. He said, "Oh, I'm a software engineer too." Yeah, I said, "Yeah, okay." Go on to the next person. And then it was like the second day into the tour. It was an unfortunate incident that happened. I'm not saying but the second day of the tour, it was the third day of the tour. I came back really early in the morning. I used to go in the morning and I would chant my rounds in the subways, because I couldn't chant in the hotel room. So I'd get up very early in the morning, about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'd go down in the subway. It was very cold, and so I couldn't chant my rounds outside. So I just simply get on the subways and go back and forth at different subway stations to chant my rounds. And I had an early morning program that morning. And I came back a little late. And when I came back, the whole tour group was sitting in the lobby. And one of them came over to me, and my name is Neil, my Western name. And he said, "Neil, where have you been? So I said, "I just was out taking a walk." "We've been waiting for you." I said,
what were you waiting for me for? And he said, you know John, the software engineer? So I said, yeah, we met. And he said, he dropped dead today on the bus. And I said, what? He said, yeah, we were on the bus and he just, we have, and his wife was there and they were all sitting and wait. They were waiting for me because they had to unexpectedly leave, and they were actually giving their condolences to the wife. She was having major difficulties getting papers, documents, death certificates for her husband, and I don't know why it happened that way, but it happened that way. And it was another incident where I was thinking that maybe Krishna was making some arrangements so I wouldn't be exposed. But it was I had to sit and talk and to give my condolences, and as everybody on the party was embracing her and expressing their condolences for what had happened. And we were trying to decide whether or not to continue with the tour or to stop. So naturally I wanted to continue with the tour. So we all discussed amongst ourselves, and it was decided that some of the tourists would go and help her do the needful, trying to get the certificates so she could go home and clear his estate. And we continued the tour. So these are a few, but there are many other stories that I can relate about the early days in the Soviet Union. But it was an adventure. It was definitely an adventure. It was something that it was a highlight in my Krishna consciousness of having to preach Krishna consciousness under such circumstances. I never really realized fully. I never had any kind of impact on me that of what could potentially happen if I was caught. I never really talked about it with anybody. We never discussed it. The only thing Kirti Raj ever told me was, don't get caught. Just don't get caught. And I remember that I was there in, it was in 1991, it was the time of the Soviet coup. That was, I think, when Gorbachev was held under house arrest, and Russia was declaring their independence from the Soviet Union. It began the breakup of the Soviet Union at that time. And I was there, Kirti Raj Prabhu and I were the only ones in the Soviet Union at that time, and we didn't know what was going on. All we knew is we were in a building, and we heard this rumbling sound, real loud, like steel rumbling on the street. So we decided to go see what it was, and we looked, and all the way down this huge street were tanks and moving into the parliament, to the White House, the Russian parliament, of military, and all of them were converging from different sides of the cities to come and to. We didn't know. We thought it was a communist takeover. We thought this was it, you know, that it was glasnost at that time. It was sort of like things were easing a little bit under Gorbachev's regime. But we thought it was a communist takeover. And we tried listening to BBC. We tried to get radios to find out what was going on. And we didn't know exactly what was going on. So we decided to go down to follow the military. to the White House, and people were in the streets chanting Yeltsin's name. That was the time when Yeltsin got up on the front of the tank and started calling out to all the people. A few people were killed at that time. I think they were run over by a tank. Giriraj was, he turned to me and he said, you know, he said, there are two of us in the Soviet Union right now. And he said, if we leave, we may not ever get back in. And he said, I have a wife and two kids. So I said, are you asking me to stay? So he said, well, I have a wife and two kids. So at that particular point, I was thinking that I had to make a decision. Should I leave the Soviet Union or should I stay and go underground? And because we still had no idea. We had no idea at that time what was taking place. And Giriraj was thinking that he should leave very soon, you know, because he may have problems leaving. So I said, okay. You know, I said, if you think I should stay, there's nobody else that's here. Gopal Krishna Maharaj was not in the Soviet Union at that time. Probably Vishnu Swami, who were the other traveling preachers. And I think Indradumna Maharaj had also been coming around that time. They were not, nobody was there. And if the communist was going to close everything off, they would never be able to get in. So I had made the decision that I guess I'll have to stay. And it was Sannyas Das, the one that was portrayed in Salted Bread. Sannyas Das was really, when he heard me say that, the tears were coming to his eyes. And he said that my respect for you, he says, increased, you know, 1,000 times. You know, when he heard me say that I was willing to stay in the Soviet Union. And he was, because I at that time I was thinking that I would just go underground and try to preach underground and learn Russian. And I wouldn't be able to leave or wouldn't be good. Because if I ever left, I would never be able to get back in again. So we had this whole long discussion. And then finally we got through on the radio and we found out what was taking place. That it wasn't a communist takeover. In fact, it was the breakup of the Soviet Union, the breakup of the communist rule. And Giriraj, he stayed on for some time, and we continued preaching in Moscow together. I mentioned Giriraj Prabhu's main name because, as I said at the beginning, that he was really the unsung hero. When he was GBC of the whole Soviet Union, everything, which. But after 1991, when that coup was successful, Gorbachev was removed, Russia established its independence, and the Soviet Union broke up. Then that's when we finally were able to come out in the open and actually practice Krishna consciousness and establish temples and establish a society. And at that time, many more foreign preachers started to come into the Soviet Union to preach Krishna consciousness. And then, I guess, the rest is already known what happened from that point in time. And literally thousands, I don't even know the figure of how many thousands. In Ukraine we have about, I think the last figure in Ukraine, there's about 9,000 devotees. That's in Ukraine alone, according to Uchita Priya, who's the regional secretary. In Russia, I don't know, tens of thousands. Krishna consciousness has definitely expanded exponentially in the Soviet Union. And the devotees who made these sacrifices, as I was watching the video, Salted Bread, I was moved to tears. I know Sarva Bhavana, and I know the difficulties he had to undergo, and I knew all those other devotees as well who were imprisoned in the labor camps. I used to see them when I would visit, because 1989, most of them were let out by that time, and I would meet them. They would all come and meet with me in Moscow and tell me their stories. And I remember one story one of the devotees told me. When he was in prison in Armenia, he was telling me that the prison guards used to run away from him. And he asked him, "Why are you running away from me?" And he said that, "Because you people preach with such conviction, I'm afraid that if I listen to you, I'm going to end up being here myself." That was the kind of conviction that the devotees had. They were ready. I mean, many times their gatherings were broken up. You know, they had to jump out windows, and they had to hide. And these devotees, it was very difficult for them, for many of them, when the Soviet Union broke up, because things changed so dramatically that many of them were kind of riding on the sort of like the adventure. You know, for them it was like it was a real adventure, Krishna consciousness. You know, to be against the Soviet regime, to be going underground, and to be avoiding the KGB agents, and it became a way of life for them. And they didn't know how to fit in, some of them, when communism fell. And because there was no temples in the 80s. Everything was just, you know, we used to meet in these little tiny flats. Sometimes a flat, one-room flat, we'd fit 100 devotees in them. And we used to meet in the Chuta Priya's flat in the old days. He had this real small flat. About 100 people would fit in there, and everybody would be sitting cramped, just like this. And I'd give a lecture, usually for about 2 or 3 hours, and they wouldn't let me stop. And then we would take our carrots and potatoes, and then everybody knew what to do after carrots and potatoes time. It was time for another lecture. And then we'd sit down again for another 2 or 3 hours for another lecture. And I used to feel, my realization during those times is that these people have such a strong desire to hear about Krishna, that Krishna's just fulfilling their desires. And I'm somehow getting caught in the crossfire. That Krishna was just putting me there just to, you know, as a way to fulfill their desires. They had such a strong desire to hear about Krishna, because they didn't want to hear anything about the party line, that's for sure. The Soviet, everything they had been spoon-fed for so many years was definitely rejected. So that was how we used to have the programs. And these devotees had made these sacrifices already many years before I had even visited, such austere circumstances and difficult circumstances, and sacrificed their lives and energy for spreading Krishna consciousness. So I was just kind of fortunate, I felt, to be able to be given the opportunity to be a part of something which was quite historical, and to observe. I considered myself more of an observer than anything else. I was just observing Prabhupada's will unfold, and I can't say that in any way, looking back at my own efforts that I made, that it was nothing in comparison to the sacrifices the devotees had made previous to me. And Krishna was just allowing me to watch what Prabhupada wanted to happen and willed to happen by his visit in 1971. And it's still happening. And it's very mystical the way Krishna spreads the Krishna consciousness movement and uses unqualified people. I remember the example I used to hear in the early days is that when there is a time of emergency, sometimes then people, good upstanding citizens, will be taken and they'll be taken and used as representatives of the government because it's an emergency to bring civil order and bring everything under control. And I was used to hear that a lot in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, that example, that although we're so unqualified, it's Kali Yuga, it's an emergency. Situation is getting worse and worse. We're seeing how society is becoming more and more degraded. And even I've been coming to India now for 30 years, more than 30 years, and then seeing the transformation even in India is astonishing. A place I thought it would never happen to. And that example was giving that in times of an emergency, sometimes even though we're not qualified, upstanding citizens are taken and they're given a band to tie around their arm to represent the government, to bring about some type of control. And I felt that was pretty much my position, that it was an emergency, and somehow Krishna put me in that place at that time. And I was able to watch Prabhupada's will unfold. And what really spread Krishna consciousness, I became so convinced of the power of Srila Prabhupada's books. It was just totally astounding. The stories people would tell me of life, the transformation of their lives, having come in contact with Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in Russian. Many of those Bhagavad Gitas, Kirtiraj Prabhu used to go, he would go in Delhi at Connaught Place, and he would just look for Russian people. And he had these books printed in Russian, and that he would spend days there just looking for Russian tourists. And he, every time he found a Russian tourist, he would ask them, can you please bring this book in, or these books in, to your country? And many of the Bhagavad Gitas got in from his efforts then doing that, getting the Bhagavad Gitas into tourists who were coming to Delhi, Russian tourists. And then, of course, as you saw in the beginning of Salted Bread, the devotees would make photocopies. And it was not easy making photocopies. It's not like you just go, the photocopy machines were all controlled by the government, you know, because all the propaganda obviously was controlled by the government. So it was not easy to get any kind of machine for reproducing books. The devotees had to even risk their lives even for getting such paraphernalia together. And they would hand stitch them, bind them, and go out and distribute them in the streets. And Prabhupada's books, I have a whole database filled with letters that were written in the late 1980s, early 1990s, that were sent to the BBT. Stories. You read these letters and these stories of these communist people telling them how Prabhupada's book changed their lives. It's astounding. Astounding. You know, old people, grandmothers, professionals, doctors, children, they were all writing letters to the BBT and telling their story of how Bhagavad Gita as it is changed their life. So this is it's a revolution. You know, Krishna consciousness is a revolution. And we're meant to continue this revolution and to fight against materialistic society, atheism, degradation. And each place has its own unique austerities for spreading Krishna consciousness. The devotees in the Soviet Union had their austerities, and you have your austerities. And Prabhupada would always emphasize that if devotees simply remain pure, just strictly following the regulative principles, chanting Hare Krishna, then Krishna consciousness will be spread, and purity is the force. So you are all very fortunate to have been introduced to Srila Prabhupada and his representatives, and now you have your mission, which you are all taking part of, and in your various ways. One of the missions is this Bhaktivedanta Hospital, which is a very great, as I can see, facility for spreading Krishna consciousness. And devotees are coming from all over the world, and their hearts are changing. I can tell you, so I've heard from so many devotees, and of course you all know the story of my sister, whose heart changed. What I couldn't do in 30 years was done in a few days to my sister after she came and visited the devotees of Radha Gopinath Mandir and the Bhaktivedanta Hospital and met the devotees. So you're part of a very important preaching mission, and you have to also help stop the degradation of Kali Yuga and be strict and have conviction that what Prabhupada has given us is the perfect way to please Lord Chaitanya. Yatyata yata gora padara vinde. To the degree that we serve Lord Chaitanya, to that degree we become qualified to understand the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. Everything becomes revealed. If we take up this mission, Lord Chaitanya's mission, and preach boldly and with conviction that Krishna consciousness is really the only hope for modern society. So, anyways, I was going to speak on chapter text 29, but somehow the introduction acted as a catalyst for me to speak about some other things. So, thank you all for kindly listening. It's getting late. I think we should probably end here. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Should we end with a little short kirtan? Is that okay? Can we end with a short kirtan? Yes? Okay. Okay.